That was quick. Good evening, and thank you for inviting me for this honor, but most of all, thank you for the interest, because it is because of an interest like that that the work in Moldova is possible and in many other places. So keep on. So evangelism in Moldova, the work in Moldova. I will start with Moldova. This is a small country which is located right in between Romania and Ukraine, the very country where the war is going on right now. This is a very small country. The language, the official language there is Romanian, Romanian language, but basically this is a Latin, our local version of Latin, that was brought to that region by at least Trajan in the end of the first century. So probably some Christians came with him too, because Christianity was planted very early in that region. Just like every other nation, God has blessed us with many wonderful things. We have beautiful nature. What makes us probably special is a very fertile soil, which is called what's called king soil or black soil, chernozem. Everything that grows there is so tasty. And when I go somewhere else, the vegetables and fruits, for some reason, taste not that well. So if you want to know how real vegetable or fruit tastes, like apricot, apple, so go to Moldova. You're very welcome. But just like in every country, the most beautiful blessing we all enjoy is people. Wonderful people created in the wonderful way in the image of God. The people who, like everywhere, are in need of the gospel, in need of salvation, in need of knowing the truth and living the truth. And like in every other country, there are some challenges for preaching the gospel in Moldova. And everyone who wants to do that needs to be aware of those challenges if he or she wants to be successful. So from my perspective, of course, what I can tell is only what is based on what I know, on my experience. But from my perspective, there are at least three major factors that determine the conditions in Moldova for preaching. And one of them is the Orthodox faith background, the Orthodox Church. If you believe the information in the Wikipedia, 97 to 98% of Moldovans claim to be Orthodox. This is good on the one hand, because that means that the concept of God is already there and you have this common ground to start with. But on the other hand, the Orthodox faith is a very specific one. Just like Catholic denomination, everything, most important things are based there on sacraments, on mysteries, on mystical processes, transformations that go on without your mind being involved. And so if you want to be saved, you need to be saved from the original sin, you need to be transformed, you need your sinful nature being healed, and the only way you can do that by going to the Orthodox Church, by going to the authorized representative of the Orthodox Church, of the bishop who has power, who has, as they claim, the Holy Spirit, and who can administer baptism, and then who can turn the bread and the wine into the body and into the blood of Jesus Christ, literal body, literal blood that you need to consume if you want those mystical processes work and if you want to be saved. As a result, the general understanding of what Christianity is all about for most of the people is that you need from time to time to go to the church. You don't even have to be necessarily a part of the assembly, just you need to go to the church building and to get those mystical things, those mysteries. There are seven sacraments that they claim they have. And that creates quite a substantial difficulty, because if everything is based on mystical things and you just depend on the church and on the bishop, then there is no need to study the Bible. There is no need to seek the truth, to understand the truth, to obey the truth. And so the concept of a Bible study, of the significance of the responsibility to study what the Word of God says, not speaking about doing what it says, is not there. So if you, it's not like here in the States, you cannot come to a person and invite him to study the Bible and expect that he at least understands that this is something important, that this is something that is needed, even if that person considers himself to be a Christian. So this is one of the challenges. And before inviting anyone to study the Bible, you need to make them interested in studying the Bible. And again, the Orthodox background creates a different obstacle here, because the Orthodox faith is tied to the nationality. The Orthodox faith came very early to that region from the Byzantine Empire, and so it is so closely connected to the nationality that it is perceived as a national religion. And so if somebody comes and invites a Moldovan or a Russian or a Ukrainian to consider a different teaching, that would be like an invitation to betray your culture, to betray your country, to betray your ancestors, to question salvation, to question Christianity, to question the faith of the whole nation, and of course of your ancestors. And this is not easy for many people to bear when they understand that this is what you directly or indirectly inviting them to consider. And this is quite a challenge. And again, in order to get that kind of person interested in studying the Bible, you really need to know how to do that. And lastly, this Orthodox background presents a difficulty and a challenge because of what is going on right now in Ukraine. It may sound strange or even weird to you, but the Russian Orthodox Church supports Putin. They believe that what Putin is doing right now in Ukraine is right. In fact, they believe that he started doing the things too late, but better later than never. And Moldovan Orthodox Church is a part of the Russian Orthodox Church. Here in the right corner at the bottom, you see the Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church. And the head of the Moldovan Orthodox Church is right near him. And we will speak more about that, but that also creates a very specific atmosphere in Moldova right now that should be taken into consideration when you try to preach there. Okay, the next factor is poverty. Before the war in Ukraine started, Moldova had been the poorest country, officially the poorest country in Europe. We were poor already. And then COVID came, and our economy was damaged even more. The COVID was still there when the high prices for natural gas, for oil, exploded and made the things very challenging and very difficult for the Moldovans. And then we still had those high prices when the war got started. And during the first days, the expectation was that Moldova would immediately be involved in that war. And again, I will speak more about why exactly. But with God's help, that did not happen. But still, Moldova was flooded by the refugees from Ukraine, and Moldova could hardly support her own population at that time. So you can imagine that the conditions are quite challenging economically there. And many people, they are stressed by the conditions of life. And again, this, on the one hand, this creates an opportunity, because when you realize that you cannot get by on your own, you understand that you need help. And who can help if not God? And godly people. On the other hand, the challenge is that people are so much depressed, so much preoccupied with solving their physical needs that they think they do not have time and need for doing anything else, for solving any other problems. So if you invite them to study the Bible, in addition to the challenges that we discussed earlier, they would say, I have no time. I'm so tired. I have no energy for anything else. On the other hand, some of them, because they hope to receive some help, they may come to you. They may attend your Bible studies. They may be even baptized and do all things as long as they are helped. But as soon as you start helping them, they will go and look for somebody else. And this is really a challenge. I'm thinking about Jesus who fed those 5,000. The need was there. And the danger that they would be misled by that help was there. He fed them. But they remained blind to what they really had to look for in Jesus. And so quite often things like that happen in Moldova, and this is constantly a challenge. So poverty is the second factor, I would say. And the third one is the division, the geopolitical division. Right now, the whole world is divided. The minority are with the Russia, and the majority are with Ukraine and those who support Ukraine. But Moldova is divided, I would say, 60% to 40%. On the map in the right, you can see the results of our parliament elections that took place less than a year ago. The yellow color represents the regions where the majority voted for the party that was for Ukraine, pro-West. But the red color stands for the regions that voted for the politicians who were pro-Russia. And 40% approximately, and the percentage was much higher not long ago. Again, it can sound unthinkable to you. Who can support Russia? Who can agree with what Russia is doing there right now? But the things, as always, they are quite complicated, and there are many people who sincerely do that. Here is an example. Just two guys to be compared. The one in the left is me, of course. Well, in the past, cameras were better. That is why I use pictures from the past. So I am among those who think Russia is doing terrible things in Ukraine. But the guy in the right, he's a Christian, Andrei. He sincerely believes that what Russia does is right. Many years ago, we agreed to disagree, and we could have fellowship together. We could worship together, because we agreed that the common ground between us was more important than those geopolitical point of view differences. We agreed that the future will show. We agreed that the solution was the same, that if people follow what God says, every problem will be solved. So no matter who is right or wrong politically, if we worship God, if we do what God says, we are okay. That was until the war in Ukraine started. And because Andrei supports what Russia is doing, you can understand that he supports a violent solution to the problem. And that means that he agrees that people who present a threat, a problem to Russia, that they can be killed even, exterminated. And so one morning he came and said that he could not worship with us anymore, with me actually, anymore, because of that. He said, I feel a hypocrite. I cannot smile to you because I know that you are an enemy of Russia by your views. You present a danger. Either you are a fool or a conscious enemy. And if a court decides that you, Sergei, present danger and will decide that you must be executed, I would do that. This is what he said. So this is just an example how tense things are. And if that tension can be between Christians who had spent 20 years together, he was coming to our, he's a very good guy. He's a very sincere. And if that obstacle, that wall of separation can appear under those conditions, what then to say about people who do not even try to serve God? Of course, all problems like that are rooted in our history that can be traced back to the medieval time when the current Moldova was a part of a bigger principality of Moldova. And at that time, the major threat was coming from the Islamic Ottoman Empire. But in 18, this is one of the castles from that period, but in 1812, there was a war with the Ottomans, and Moldova was fighting against them with Russia. And then when Napoleon was coming towards Russia, Russia needed a quick peace agreement with the Ottomans. So they signed that agreement. And according to that agreement, what is current Moldova today was annexed to Russia. Nobody asked the Moldovans whether they wanted to become a part of Russia, whether they wanted their principalities to be cut into pieces. They just didn't consider that interesting, important for them. So this is how Moldova became a part of the Russian Empire. And when the Russian Empire collapsed in 1917, this part of Moldova immediately wanted to join the rest of Moldova that at that time was already a part of Romania. And so from 1918 till 1940, our Moldova was a part of Romania. But in 1940, there was another peace agreement between Stalin and Hitler. And that agreement, peace agreement, had a secret protocol. And according to that protocol, Romania had to give back this Moldova, our Moldova, to the Soviet Union. So in 1940, Moldova became a part of the Soviet Union. And with that, atheism came to Moldova, and many other things. But churches were closed down, worship was forbidden, Bibles were removed. On this picture, you see a crazy old woman forces a young girl who wants to go to school, who wants to have knowledge, but that lady says, no, your place is in the church building. You don't need school, you don't need knowledge. Go where old and ignorant people are, go to the church. This is the kind of propaganda that existed in the Soviet Union. And of course, when you have no God in your picture, and when you try to build a communistic paradise, without God, everything becomes possible, as Dostoevsky said. Everything becomes permissible. And so, for the sake of bright future, terrible things were going on within the Soviet Union before 1940, and those terrible things came to Moldova after 1940. Anyone who presented a threat to the communists, anyone who had education, anyone who would be a leader, anyone who could sustain himself or herself already, who was independently thinking, was a threat. even if you just belong to a part of the society that is considered as not beneficial for the future communistic society, you should be somehow removed from the picture. So very many people were shot just like that. This picture was not taken in Moldova, but very many were executed daily in Moldova. Others would be exiled to Siberia and left there in the middle of the winter. I talked to people who were exiled and who were telling me all the horror stories of what was going on. As you can imagine, those people who remember those things from history, who had relatives who suffered, who were exterminated, who were killed. By the way, even the exile to Siberia was not everything. Immediately after World War II, hunger was organized. The army would come and remove all sources of food. So food was removed from, and then people were allowed to die. Thousands of people died, and that was done not only in Moldova, but for Moldovans, that was really strange. And when they came, the Moldovan language was canceled immediately. The Romanian language was canceled, and the Russian was introduced. Now imagine being a Moldovan there. This is not your country anymore. You don't even know the language everything operates. What sort of feelings would you have towards Russia? So those who have this Romanian background, they have nothing to admire about Russia. They expect only bad things from Russia, and they want to be as far away from Russia as possible. But there was a different part of the people, those Russian speakers who came when the Soviet Union came, who replaced the authorities, who, because they knew Russian, they had advantage, and they were promoted. So for them, the Soviet Union was a source of their comfort, a source of their good position. And, of course, the Romanian history was foreign to them. So coming back to me and Andrei, my relatives were exiled. My mother almost died of hunger when she was, I think, 3 or 4 years old. And it was by accident that she survived. But Andrei, his father, was an officer in the Soviet army. And his father-in-law was a former KGB officer. And of course, the education that he got, the perspective he was raised under, was quite different from mine. So when you look from this perspective, you start to understand why the difference is so big and the tension is so high. So when the Soviet Union collapsed and the borders were removed, of course, the Romanian part of Moldova was very excited about contacts with Romania, about the union with Romania. But the Russian speakers, for them, that was something terrible. And so that was the time when the tension exploded. And in 1992, we had a civil war in Moldova. So this picture was not taken in Ukraine these days. It was taken in 1992. Those who have pro-Russia views, they say that was a civil war because terrible Romanians, they wanted to destroy them, they wanted to remove their freedom, to make them a part of a foreign country, and so on and so on. But for the Moldovans, it was Russia who organized that war, who supported that war, and who played the final role in the formation of the Transnistrian, of the breakaway Republic of Transnistria that is not acknowledged as a state by practically no one, including Russia. So this is what we have, and this Republic of Transnistria, you probably you could hear the news about Transnistria right now, because everybody is concerned that Russia is probably trying to use this breakaway republic to create a new tension spot, a new hot spot, because they are located in between Moldova and Ukraine, and they can be used against Ukraine and against the city of Odessa, and not only. So our population is divided and poor, and so politicians who are not responsible, who are corrupted, they can easily use that tension and that division in order to make people even more poor and to benefit from that. So what you have in the left is the result of the parliament election in 2018. The blue and green color stands for the parties who were openly mafia kind of parties. Everybody knew that they were stealing money from the state and from the people. But because they bribed people, because they used a part of the money they had access to buy their votes, they were voted. And they had the majority in the parliament. The red color is the pro-Russia votes, and the yellow is pro-West. Of course, today the things are much better, but who knows what will be next time when we have election after all the difficulties, economical difficulties, after all the emotions that go on right now in the society. So this is what Moldova is at this moment. And try to imagine that that you go to Moldova and try to preach under those circumstances. Well, I was in that position in 1995. That was not long after the war was stopped, not long after the Soviet Union collapsed, the economy was ruined of Moldova. People didn't have even electricity all the time. And I was a student and then a PhD student in Moscow State University, and this is when I came back to Moldova. Well, I'm quite... I will use myself as an illustration of what it was to be a Soviet person of that time. I was born in 1968. My granny baptized me in the Russian Orthodox Church several days after my birth, secretly, because without that secrecy, my parents would have problems at work. My parents, they were raised during the time of the Soviet Union, so they were atheists, and I was raised as an atheist. In fact, I could preach atheism at that time, because I sincerely believed that it takes to be just crazy to believe in fairy tales. And I didn't want to believe in fairy tales. I wanted to know the truth, and that's why I entered Moscow State University, because that was the best university within the former Soviet Union, and I wanted to be a scientist, to study the reality. When I was a student there, I tried to read the Bible, because, well, this is a famous book, and if you want to know something about this life, you need to read books like that, at least to know what they say. So when I read it, I had a really bad impression. I started with the Old Testament, of course, and I did not like the picture of God I could see there. And those Hebrews, they were kind of stubborn and strange and never learning anything. So I couldn't understand how anyone could get anything from that story. So I decided to read the last book. At least it was something, Revelation. It was about the end of the world, exciting. So I read it, and again, it was, who could believe that? That's not even a fairy tale. So strange. So that was really a question for me. How could anyone take this book seriously? So I went trying to find out the truth. I was very much interested in philosophy as a scientist. I knew what evidences were all about. So, and I also was interested in studying English. And through God's grace, even though I did not want, didn't even try, didn't even dream about paying any attention to any faith, not speaking about Christianity, but God used the circumstances, and I was exposed to the Bible. And after some time, I realized that, those stories are not that crazy as I thought. And with a little time, I realized that there was a very deep philosophy in the Bible. In fact, the best philosophy I knew, because comparing to other philosophies, it could make a person happy no matter what. No matter whether you are prosperous or poor, sick or whatever, if you believe what that book says, you can be strong, you can be fulfilled, and you can be happy. And I was, as every young man at that time, or probably as many, I was really interested in the question: what is the purpose of life? What happiness is all about? So I was really struck by philosophy, and the fact that I misunderstood the Bible so much was probably another motivation for me to be interested, because that was something. I was humiliated by my ignorance, by my stupid conclusions in the beginning, and I wanted to fix that. So, but of course, it is one thing to believe that the Bible has a good philosophy, and another thing is to know that the Bible is the true philosophy. That philosophy is not just one of many. Because you always can say, what if there is another philosophy even better? In fact, there are quite many who claim that what Quran says is much better. Or what Buddha taught is so much better, depending on who you ask. So I knew it was an interesting philosophy, but I still was not ready to sacrifice my life, to dedicate my life to living that philosophy. And again, God used the circumstances that I and my interest in English that I was exposed to the lectures of about the evidences. And this is what really got me excited. First of all, the very concept that there may be evidences for faith. And second, when I studied those evidences and realized that they were substantial, and then I started looking for extra evidences, and I was seeing them everywhere, including in my subject. And I was studying soil microbiology at Moscow State University. So from the way the living organisms, the ecological systems are organized, so the evidence were coming from everywhere. And so that was what got me thinking. But it is one thing when you know this is the truth. It is one thing to know that you should do the truth, and quite different thing to start doing that. first of course, again, my Orthodox background, I was an atheist, but culturally I considered myself an Orthodox, and I imagined myself coming back home and telling my grandparents who baptized me in the Orthodox Church that, hey, I'm not Orthodox, that I will tell everybody else, hey, I'm not Orthodox. So for them it would be like I sold my soul to some foreigners. Again, there was another thing that happened in my life. There was a fire in my room, and then I had either to give up everything or to start everything all over. And I said, why not to start doing what you know you should do? So this is how the things got started very soon after that fire. I was baptized, and in 1995, I came back to Moldova, and I was so excited about those evidences. I was sure that the rest of Moldova will be converted very quickly. But, of course, the reality, including the details that we discussed, made things more complicated. Nobody wanted to listen. Evidences for faith? Are you crazy? Christianity? when we have so many problems, when we have this Orthodox Church, and all you need to do is just to go and to take go to some through some procedures, and that's it. But you say I need to study the Bible. Why? What for? I don't have time, and things like that. But thanks to God, I was not by myself in Moldova. Very good Christians with interest in the Lord's work everywhere started coming to Moldova and preaching the gospel and teaching the gospel. And the door of opportunity for them was open again in a very special way. When my parents learned that some Americans were coming to Moldova under those conditions, they could not believe that an American could leave the prosperity, the security of America and come to Moldova into that misery. So in the beginning, many of my relatives believed that they probably were spies. They could not think of anything else. But some bad activities. Of course, America is bad. And the Soviet Union is good. This is what was taught to everyone. But when they came, it became very quickly obvious that their faith was genuine and that they were willing to risk and to sacrifice, and they were there not to entertain themselves and not to be entertained. They were there to preach the gospel, to share the gospel with everyone. So they showed Jesus by their sacrifices and by their work. So John Smith, he was the first who came with Greg Wynne, and that winter was exceptionally cold. And so when they would preach the gospel for hours standing in that frost, that was something. And that attracts attention and makes people pay attention to what you say. That is what I believe made the Moldovans interested in studying the Bible with them, because they saw that they were serious, that what they were talking about was really significant for them. So Steve Brewer, he and his family, they spent 1 year in Moscow in 1994. And then in 1999, they came to Moldova and they spent a year in Moldova. And again, the conditions were quite challenging for that. But by the end of their stay, very many people were baptized. Johnny Felker, many of you know him very well. He has been to Moldova many and many times, and we all appreciate very much his knowledge and his kindness and his faith. And I don't have time to mention so many other wonderful people and wonderful congregations who supported them, who supported me, and who supported the Christians in Moldova. But it is through their work that right now we have four congregations in Moldova in four major cities. One of them is in Chisinau. This is the capital of Moldova. This is the church I am a member of. One of them is in the city of Belts, in that region that votes for the communists and for the socialists, pro-Russia, and the two cities of Bendera and Tiraspol are located within Transnistria, that breakaway republic. The first person who was converted in Moldova was Ekaterina Yemnova. When I went back to Moldova, I started working at the Institute of Microbiology and Biotechnology. So we worked in the same laboratory. He was my supervisor, and this is how we met, and this is how it was possible to preach the gospel to her. On this picture, you can see most of the members and visitors in Chisinau. Ekaterina Imnova is in the right. She knew Luba. And this is how Luba, through Kate, became a part of our congregation. Both Ekaterina and Luba, they have PhD in genetics, in microbiology. In fact, we have four members with PhD grade in the church. Because again, it is only when you spend together enough time and when people see that the gospel is important to you is when they start paying attention to what you say. You can see Johnny Felker here. My mother is in the left. The lady in the back is Irina Vinokurova and her husband Sergei Vinokurov. Irina is my cousin, and this is how we how I was able to have access to them. And also this beautiful lady in the right is my wife Anna. And the couple in the back, Victor and Nelia Tsurkanu. That story is very interesting too. Their daughter was studying the Bible by correspondence, and when she was ready and wanted to be baptized, the lady from the States who helped her started looking for someone in Moldova who could help her with baptism, and this is how they found me. And it happened that our houses were just one block apart. That was really interesting. So Lena was baptized, and then through her, her mother was baptized, and then in a year or two, in about a year or two, Victor was baptized, and now he is one of the of those who regularly preaches in Chisinau. Okay, here you can see the members and visitors in belts, most of them. This church was started when one of the members in Chisinau started telling about us to her friends in Belts, and they got interested in studying the Bible with us and started inviting us. And so this is how they were able to learn about the gospel. They were baptized, and this is probably the group where the problem of poverty, the poverty situation created most of the problems, because the ladies are very poor and they need help, but when you try to help them, often tension would happen. Why was that person helped? Why not me? Why was not helped then? And so on. So at one point we had to tell them that we will stop helping them even because of all those problems, that the only thing we could offer them just preaching the Bible. If you want that, we will keep coming. If you don't, you decide what you want. And that was the moment of truth, and thanks to God, the Bible was more interesting for them than physical help. And okay, here you can see most of the members and visitors in Bendera and Tiraspol. Their story is very interesting too. The churches there were started by a brother from an institutional congregation, and he was an older American, very kind, very wanting to help people in their needs. So he came, and he sawing the problems, he started helping lots of people as much as he could. He would bring clothes, buy food, give money and things like that. And he was not buying them, for sure. He was helping them, but because he did not know the language, he could not judge what was going on. Very many people were baptized, not because they were converted, but because they were attracted by that help. But the group was growing very quickly, and they started looking for someone to work with the group while that person was away. And this is how they found me and invited me. And for a time, I was working with those people and teaching them till the brethren from the States decided that I was too dangerous for them, and then they blocked my access to the church. But again, the problem that I told you in the very beginning, people were attracted, and if you really like the person, if you really appreciate the person, even if you do not understand what that person is talking about, you are willing to agree to do what he expects you to do, because you want just to treat him back. And this is how some of them were baptized, even without knowing facts like that Jesus was raised from the dead, or other basic concepts without which you cannot be sure that your faith is not in vain and that the gospel is not in vain in the light of 1 Corinthians 15. So when I realized that and I said that to that person, he was surprised. He said he had no idea that things like that were happening. But very many people were baptized that way. And of course, very many of them stopped coming very soon. But again, there were those who just appreciated that kindness. And through that kindness, they got interested in studying the Bible as the cause of that kindness, as something that can produce people like that. And their interest in the Bible was genuine. And so even though my access was blocked to them, as soon as brethren became not able to come too frequently and they were left on their own, they invited me back. And after they invited me, those brethren could not stop me from that moment on. So this is the story of the Christians in Bindera and Tiraspol. Here you can see the those who regularly preach. This is in the left upper corner, Vasily Vladov. He preaches in Bindera. In the left, in the bottom, Vasily Nikolaev, he preaches in Tiraspol. You can see me. And Victor, the church in Chisinau meets at 5 p.m. We do not have a meeting in the morning, because in the morning I usually go either to Belts, which is within 2.5-hour drive from Chisinau, or to Bindera, 2-hour drive from Chisinau, to encourage and to preach for the Christians there. And when I go to Bindera, Victor goes to Belts. Usually, besides the worship meetings on Sundays, we also have a Bible study on Sunday evening. And usually the members from Bindera, Tiraspol, from Belts, from Lithuania, they join that Bible study online. We also meet on Tuesdays. And again, the members and visitors from everywhere, including from Moscow, from Lithuania, from Moldova, from Transnistria, they participate online and on Fridays. And also on Wednesday, I have a study with young Christians in the Czech Republic. And once a year we have a Bible lectureship, and all the members and visitors from all the four cities come together for a 3-day intensive Bible study session. We could have 15 to 16 Bible lessons within 3 days with singing and question and answer sessions. This is the picture from the first Bible lectureship in 2006. And the pictures from the four last Bible lectureship. The only time when we did not have it was in 2020 because of COVID. So in the end, I will show you this picture of a typical Moldovan road, rolling hills, and I would use this picture metaphorically and say that they're still in Moldova. There still are in Moldova many valleys to be filled and many hills to be leveled to make the way straight. But with God's help, everything is possible. And in the end, I will see if I can run this video of the Christians in Chisinau, including Andrei Marchenko, singing. And I hope very much that before too long, it will be clear where the truth is, and Andrei will sincerely come back. Thank you very much.